touchdown brings me round again to find I'm not the man they think I am at home. Oh, no, no, no. I'm a rocket man.
You know, Wisconsin's got its own rocket man. He is Eric Camberg, and we're going to be talking with him today. I tell you what, we're going to talk about rocket launches as well, because he knows a lot about them. And you ever watch one? The excitement is what I think motivates amateur rocketry clubs to build rockets that can reach heights maybe up to 40,000 feet. It's a competitive sport here in our state and elsewhere as well. And it's also a tool for scientific research. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Eric Camberg, who's been into rocketry since he was 8 years old. 35 years later, he holds the highest national rocketry certifications that you can get. He's co-founder of the Model Rocketry Club. It's titled Cool City Rockets, which launches rockets monthly in Two Rivers, Wisconsin. And for 22 years, Eric has helped organize Rockets for Schools, which holds its annual competition this coming weekend, May 11th to the 12th, in Sheboygan, Wisconsin. And as we visit with him, I hope you'll join in. Tell us about your experiences with rockets. Did you assist or witness the launch of a rocket? Join in. Give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Eric Camberg, welcome. Thanks for joining in today.
Hey, Larry. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Great to be here. You got into rocketry as a young guy, still doing it. What keeps you interested in rocketry?
Yeah, so I think you captured kind of the initial essence. A lot of people get into it for the smoke and the fire, kind of the excitement. What keeps people in it, I think, is a variety of things. So me personally, my dad did it as a kid, and so he introduced me to rocketry at a young age, and now I have kids. So we have three active generations of Camberg's flying rockets around here. But there's a lot of different parts to it. You had mentioned the competition specifically, or in general in Wisconsin, in eastern Wisconsin this weekend, we have a competition for middle school and high school students from all over the U.S., but primarily the Midwest, where we roll science into it, right? So we have scientific payloads. So a lot of people stay involved with that. I'm a naturally competitive person. So if there's a rocketry contest out there to be competed for, I'm definitely in it, whether it be, you know, the highest or the fastest or whatever it might be. Anytime there's a competition, I tend to participate.
You were probably, I mean, you started at eight. You were probably, I'm guessing, around 19 or so when the movie October Sky came out.
Yes. So, Homer Hickam and Colwood, West Virginia. So I think that was a wonderful book. And then, you know, so the book preceded the movie, but definitely an inspiration. And as I look back and I reflect, and I've read Homer's many of his books, there's a lot of parallels between his upbringing and mine, except I think he was trying to escape Colwood, West Virginia in order to get into the rocketry industry. And I've got some pretty deep roots in Wisconsin, so I haven't tried quite as hard to escape. How about that?
Okay. Eugene in Viola has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Eugene.
Well, yes, to your guest. I remember building Estes rockets when I was a kid in the 1950s. And there were different sizes and different expenses on those. And I always had to buy the cheaper ones. But when you got them set up, they'd go up about so high, and a parachute would open, and then they would come down. And I'm wondering if your guest knows anything about those.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit, Eugene. Yeah, so that's still the essence of model rocketry. So Estes Rockets is still very much around. There's a company called Lock Precision that's right here in Plymouth, Wisconsin, that also manufactures smaller kits for model rocketry. But as you had mentioned, Eugene, there's different sizes of rocket motors, and there's the A through C, which is kind of a standard size, about 3/4 inch diameter by about 3 inches long. And then there's the mighty D12, which dates back to, I think, the early to mid 60s. So, Eugene, they're still cranking those out of Colorado yet. So that's still most people's gateway into model and high power rocketry. Yes, very much so.
So let's talk about model versus high power. You launch both model rockets and larger high powered rockets. Kind of what's the basic differences between those?
Regulations and size. Fantastic question. So model rocketry, still a fairly common thing, I'd say, with schools and 4-H and other learning organizations, and even kids big and old and young and small like myself. So model rocketry, kind of A through D rocket engines, and then high power, that's when you run into bigger rockets, bigger motors, a lot more regulations. So there's, I'm going to try and keep this brief, but there's two national organizations that govern model rocketry. There's Tripoli Rocketry Organization, which focuses more on the high power end of things. And then there's National Association of Rocketry, which is NAR. And they focus more on the model, but definitely include high power as well. So long story short, anytime that rocket gets to be weighing 3.3 pounds or more and containing 125 grams of propellant or more, it's a high power rocket by definition, and it requires certification through one of those two governing bodies. And there's a few other things too. The biggest thing there is that when it enters that high power realm, then we need an FAA waiver in order to fly into airspace. Okay, so there's just a few more rules just to make sure that we keep things safe, which is of course always the number one priority, especially with rocketry.
Yeah, I guess I wouldn't want to be flying along someplace and suddenly here comes a rocket right by my plane.
Right, right. Yeah, so just for reference, in the state of Wisconsin, I think there's only two active rocketry waivers. One is in the Fond du Lac area. I think that's 6,000 or 8,000 feet above ground level. And then down near Kenosha, Wisconsin, at Bong Recreation Area, there's two groups that fly out of there on a regular basis. They have a waiver to about 10,000 feet, and I think that's ASL above sea level. So,
what's the what are the largest and highest flying rockets that you yourself have launched?
Yeah, so good question. So there have been people that have flown bigger rockets and higher and faster, but me personally, the largest motor I've ever flown is an O, right? So kind of when we talk about rocket motors, they double each successive letter, right? So a B motor would be twice the power of an A motor and so on and so on. So as you go through the alphabet, by the time you're getting up to an O motor, it's 5 or 6 inches in diameter and 5 or 6 feet long, a lot of power. So I've flown an O motor in that particular flight. There have been a few, but I had one that went pretty fast. It was an O25,000, which doesn't mean too much to anybody, but it went from standing still. It was about a 100-pound rocket, so a good-sized rocket. It went from sitting still to Mach 2.3 in 1.48 seconds. So it pulled 64 Gs on the way. So you think about if you're ever flying an aircraft, if you're doing aerobatics, the human body, I think, before you start to black out is, you know, 6 to 8 Gs, maybe 10 Gs if you're really conditioned for it. This was 64 Gs, and I had some electronics on board that it actually literally flattened them from the acceleration of the launch.
And you had another one that went... Or maybe that's the one. How high did that one go?
So that one went about 23,000 feet. So I have gone higher, Larry. So, again, there are people that have gone higher than me. My personal best is just under 45,000 feet. And when you talk about FAA waivers, there's only a few places in the U.S. Where you can do that. So one of which is Argonia, Kansas, kind of middle of nowhere. Wheat fields, grain fields, fun stuff like that. And then out west, the Black Rock Desert in northwest Nevada. So that flight was in the high desert of northwest Nevada.
Oh, man. And now you're the highest national, you have the highest national rocketry certification that available. I mean, what does that mean?
Yeah, so what that means is once you cross over into the high power realm, right, you want to fly those bigger rockets that you can't just get at Hobby Lobby or the local hobby store or even online from estesrockets.com. So if you want to take that next step, again, the key thing is to join either Tripoli or NAR, right? Those are those two organizations. And then there's a three-step certification process. You can do You can keep yourself at level zero if you want to fly the smaller rockets. You can go to level one, which again is an H or an I motor, fairly small high power rockets. If you want to do level two, you have to take a written test. It's 25 questions on basically safe design and guidance principles of rocketry. And then the other is strictly on safety of rocketry. If you pass that written test, you can fly that larger rocket on a J, K, or an L motor. And if you pass the test and you fly that rocket successfully, then you're level two certified. Level three is, again, the highest you can go. That requires a whole, it's kind of like a design review process where you have to submit a design to this group of people called the technical committee or the NAR, technical advisory panel, I'm sorry. And you submit your design and what you're intending to do, and it gets approved, and then that person has to be present for your flight. And if that flight goes well and everything, then you can get certified to level three. You have to fly an M, N, or an O motor.
And Eric has been certified at that three level. Eric Kaemberg, our guest, he's going to be with us right up till 12:30 today as we talk rockets and rocketry here in Wisconsin with him. And you can join in, number 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Back after the news. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking rocketry today on the program as it exists in Wisconsin and elsewhere as well with our guest, Eric Kaemberg, who has been into rocketry for about 35 years. He's co-founder of the Model Rocketry Club. It's called Cool City Rockets. It launches rockets monthly in Two Rivers, Wisconsin area. For 22 years, he's helped organize rockets for schools, which holds its annual competition this coming weekend, the 11th and the 12th, in Sheboygan, Wisconsin. So as we talk with more with Eric, I hope you'll join in. Are you a rocketry enthusiast? Have you had some experiences with it? What about experience perhaps in some of the schools that offer this as for kids who are in grade school and high school, as a matter of fact, I believe. Number to call for that is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. How safe is rocketry?
That's a fantastic question. So this is actually my day job, Larry. So I'm all about the safety. So it is one of the safest hobbies, pastime activities that you can actually participate in. So statistically, we've been launching under the current safety code since its inception in about 1957. There have been over 500 million rockets flown safely since then. There was, however, there was one fatality as recently as 2015. Where unfortunately it was a Boy Scout event out in California. However, the safety code was not being followed at the time. So it's much like other maybe like a gun range where you have safety setbacks, you have a line. You know, we have very much structure to how we conduct a safe launch. All of the rocket motors are electronically ignited, right? So nobody's sitting there lighting the fuse and running. That may have been the way it worked in the 1950s or 60s, but is no longer. So we have safe setbacks. So again, as those rockets and motors get bigger, so do the setback distances. Similarly, you know, we always look at weather conditions. So if the wind is over 20 miles per hour, we simply don't fly. We always have the permission of the landowner to fly, whether it be public land, you know, if it's smaller rockets, it might be in a schoolyard. If it's bigger rockets, it's generally, again, like Bong Recreation Area in Wisconsin, or sometimes in the fall, winter, and spring seasons, it's farmers' fields, again, with permission. We only fly when the crops are not above ground. So it is a very safe activity if done properly.
John in New Berlin has a question for you, I believe. Let's go there. Hi, John.
Hey, Larry. How are you today?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I was pretty much of a geek, and I was cleaning our library just 2 weeks ago, and I came across a book that I hope your guest is familiar with. It's called Rocket Manual for Amateurs. It was published in 1960 by a Captain Bertrand Brinkley.
Oh.
Wow. Wow.
So, Eric, I'm looking at you, and I'm thinking you may not have read this book.
The Handbook of Model Rocketry. Yes, there's a rocket propulsion elements by Sutton. Bertram, I'm not familiar with that one. I am not. Sorry, John.
Oh,
sounds interesting though.
So, John, I'm sorry we can't help you out on that one, but I appreciate your call. Let's go to Rob in Appleton. Rob, hello.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call. As I told your screener that I'm 71 and I was 16 when Apollo landed on the moon. I'll never forget it. So my brother and I used to blow off SC's rockets, and my father was a pilot, and he got us in the model rocketry and into airplanes, not remote, but the ones on the string that we used to cut your finger when you started it. But my question is, the evolution of the technology is amazing to me, to be have those available to you as a citizen of the, I mean, you know, be able to go in a store and buy the advanced stuff that's available. It is just amazing. So what can you tell me about the evolution of the rocketry and the propulsion? Do you use a computer for your high altitude launches? Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Rob. So the evolution over the, say, the last 50 years or so.
Holy cow. That's a big ask, but yeah, we can definitely work on that, Rob. So there's been a ton of the evolution. I would say that the standard Estes stuff that you probably did as a youngster, that hasn't evolved or changed too much. However, new motor technology, a lot of the newer propellants are ammonium perchlorate based, which, if you don't know what that is, it's essentially the same solid rocket propellant that would be in the space shuttle solid rocket boosters in a few years back. And then the new SLS, they also have the solid rocket booster. So there's kind of more punch in a given size. And then more importantly, you're talking about computers and electronics. I'd say that's where the majority of the evolution has come. A lot of the bigger rockets, they're not relying upon the rocket engine and the rocket motor to provide the ejection where it ejects the parachute. That's all done electronically now. So there's altimeters or accelerometers, sometimes timers, sometimes three-axis gyros that are on board, determining when that rocket gets to apogee, the highest point of the flight, and says, hey, you need to deploy a parachute. And kind of the primitive rocketry, you would deploy that single parachute at that apogee, that highest point, right? Nowadays, as rockets go higher, you typically don't deploy a big parachute 40,000, 50,000 feet up, whatever, because in that jet stream, it's going to drift miles away and it's gone. So instead, we deploy a little parachute, bring it down really quick, and then at a predetermined altitude above ground, we'll deploy another parachute. So at the top, if you have, say, a 20-pound rocket, you might deploy a 6-inch parachute so it falls really fast, doesn't drift very much, and then 1,000 feet above ground, you deploy a 96-inch, 8-foot chute that's going to lower it to the ground safely. Similarly, there's trackers, whether it be radio frequency, you know, a lot of hams, if there's any hams that are listening in, we use that for tracking, as well as GPS tracking. There's this one, I got to be careful, I'm on the radio. There's this one modern system where it does all kinds of flight events, and it tells you in this woman's voice, her name is Kate. Kate broadcasts the flight over the radio or whatever PA system you have, you know, so it'll tell you launch detected. It'll tell you you're going 650 miles per hour at 2,000 feet, and it'll tell you the steps of the flight as it goes. So if you happen to lose sight of it, or you just geek out on all of the electronical data that's flowing back to you as the flight continues, there's that too. So I'd say a lot of electronics on board, and the tiny bit of, maybe not tiny bit, but there's a lot more simulation you can do with rockets now, right? So we had mentioned, not shifting gears too much, but we had mentioned some competitions earlier. Some of the competitions are, hey, we want you to fly the closest to 16,000 feet without going over, right? If you go over, you bust. So there's some simulation that you do ahead of time to say, okay, if I fly this rocket weighing this much on this motor, this combination and these weather conditions, I expect it to go 16,985 feet or whatever it might be, or 15,000. So yes, electronics, kind of the sky's the limit. A lot of times they're riding on board the rockets, especially with the bigger rockets. And then you've got the simulation you can do on the front end.
So I want to go back to the liquid versus the solid for a bit. Maybe talk about, you know, what is a solid rocket booster?
Perfect. So I'll start with the two categories. So Larry, you were asking about liquid. We don't do liquids. So amateur rocketry, it's not covered by either NAR or Tripoli, again, the two organizations. There are some, I'd say, independent groups out in the dry lake beds of California and Nevada that do a bit of liquids. But in general, even us amateurs don't do that. So in solids, you've got two main groups. You've got the black powder, which, again, most people are familiar with if they've ever dappled in rocketry. That's your Estes rockets. And that black powder, it's just sulfur, charcoal mixed together, compressed into a cardboard tube, and it's an end burner, burst from the rear end to the forward of the motor. And then there's the other type, the ammonium perchlorate based, much higher energy fuel. Again, same things that they're using in the space program if it's a solid, and that packs a lot more punch per given volume. So plus it gives a much bigger flame, smoke, noise, a better experience all around for the the rocketeer that's enjoying the show.
You've posted videos online of your rocket launches, and so you install cameras on the rockets.
Yeah, so they're one of my favorite personal aspects of the hobby is kind of the hobbies within the hobby that one can take. So I've flown cameras up to 30,000 feet. So you've got kind of not the live stream, but you throw a GoPro on the rocket, and you get your nice aerial views of whatever you're flying. Some people do snapshots. So I think back to, again, referring back to Estes, they have the Estes AstroCam that's existed since probably 1960s or 70s that used to take 110 film and take that single snapshot at Apogee. And it's evolved over time, and now it's digitalized. Having onboard camera video, scientific experiments, that's I think part of the fun within the fun.
Yeah, Joel Patton directed me to a video. It's called Rocket Battle 3. And yes, you can't watch that video without just getting excited and kind of pumped up about rocketry.
Right. So that was an interesting experience. So if people have heard of Dude Perfect, they're a group out of Texas that get excited about all kinds of fun stuff, Larry. And they also have this passion for rocketry. So I was less involved with Model Rocketry Battle 1 and 2, but Battle 3, they said, hey, let's make some big stuff. Let's go and fly it. Let's capture it all on video. There was indeed onboard video with that. And the competition in that case for the dudes that were participating, the highest altitude achieved, that person actually got to ride on the Blue Origin spaceship into space. Okay, so that was a pretty big prize for those gentlemen that were involved. That was a great experience. Those were ridiculously big rockets. I mean, I think the largest one we had was 16 inches in diameter and like 25 feet tall, weighed about 300 pounds. This was just silly big stuff. So on YouTube, that video, there's a couple times where there's a guy that looks a little bit like me that's had 42 million views to date. So it's gotten people's attention, I guess.
It is a fantastic video. I forget how long it is. It's not super long, but it's a little longer. But if you type, you know, if you're listening in and you want to see this, and you should take a look, I think if you title in Dude Perfect and YouTube, it's going to pop up.
Right.
And it is a crazy, those guys are, well, they seem crazy, but they're actually pretty darn smart guys.
Right, right. They're pretty sharp, yes.
And one of the things I noted was retrieving. And you do retrieve your rock under any circumstances.
Yeah, that's the beautiful thing about rocketry is it's not like a firework where it shoots up and goes boom, right? So sometimes there's a misconception that rocketry is single use. So I know several people that have rockets that have flown one single airframe over 100 times. I haven't quite hit that milestone with any of my rockets. I've got a couple that are over 50 flights now. And you had mentioned Cool City Rocketry and Two Rivers. I have one rocket that I fly every single month when we get together. And that one has a little over 40 flights now. So, they launch up, they deploy a parachute. If all goes well, they come back safely to ground. You reload them and do it again.
Let's talk about those rocketry competitions. We've got one for middle school and high school students in Sheboygan, and it's this coming weekend. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so that's a fantastic program that I actually learned of, again, dating myself, but back when I was on the tail end of high school. And so it's Rockets for Schools. So you can go to rocketsforschools.org, and it's open to middle and high school students, and takes place every May in Sheboygan at the Blue Harbor Resort. So students get to build a high power rocket. There's two different sizes. There's a class one, which is essentially that level one size rocket. And there's a class two, which is a little bit bigger, about 6 inches in diameter and about 8 feet tall. And they build the rocket. They come up with a scientific experiment that is flown within their respective rocket. They present that on Friday of the event. We have an NASA astronaut that comes and speaks to the students. So it's kind of an indoor day where there's presentations and speeches again from the astronaut. And then on Saturday of the launch, they go outside and with the help of rocketry people like myself, certified rocketry individuals, we fly their high-power rocket and it goes up, launches off the pier, and then recovers in Lake Michigan. So there's always a splashdown. And then we have Coast Guard or Coast Guard auxiliary boats. This year, I believe Dumper Dan is providing the recovery services from Lake Michigan. And they bring them back. The kids open up the payload section and see how their experiment performed, see if it met their hypothesis, whether it's confirmed or not. So really neat program. Launches Saturday, indoor activities Friday. It's been going on for, at least 25 years. I want to say it's since 1994, 1996. Just fantastic situation. So not that I have a radio voice, but I am the voice of Mission Control. So on Saturday when the rockets are flying outside, I'll be inside. It's kind of like NASA would have with Houston. We set up a Mission Control area, and there's 10 different stations where students are in charge of marine safety and air safety and pad safety, and just making sure that all the pieces of the puzzle are in place in order to make sure we have safe and successful launches.
So can anybody, say I wanted to drive up to Sheboygan on Saturday and watch this? I mean, could anybody join in?
Yes. Open to public, open to spectators. There's a whole bunch of booths and activities inside the Blue Harbor. In their convention area where you can go around and for kids, there's actually a stamp program. You can go and you can stamp yourself at or get stamped at each booth. It's definitely a neat program. There's availability for people to come and watch. There will be barricades that prevent you from getting out onto the pier itself because we maintain that as a safe zone. I would absolutely encourage interested parties of all ages to come out and check it out.
So how many schools, do you know how many schools in the state are involved in rocketry programs?
So I'd say in the past it used to be the majority, but I'll speak specifically to Rockets for Schools first. This year we have 25 teams, which it dipped down quite a bit when COVID hit, right? So yeah. COVID changed a lot of things, including schools participation in extracurriculars, one of which is Rockets for Schools. But the climate changed there a little bit, and we have more teams that are not just from the Midwest. So it's been an interesting evolution, and I think those numbers are due to grow a little bit. But I think a lot of schools and, again, local groups like Boy Scouts and 4-H and things like that, they're still actively participating in model rocketry. I think that's still a badge for Boy Scouts. So at the hobby level, the model rocketry level, there's still quite good active participation from, I'd say, the majority of, schools and organizations.
You know, this has been going on now for quite a few years. I'm just wondering if this has led to, kids' involvement in this has actually led to them having careers in that area. Do you know at all, Eric?
I certainly do. So, again, I'm not quite the Homer Hickam October Sky story. I kind of view everything from the sidelines and just keep a hobby as a hobby rather than turning into a job. But I have several rocketry acquaintances that I've gotten to know over the years that are working at BlueX, that are working at SpaceX, that are working at NASA or suppliers too. So 100% absolutely yes. There hasn't been a private aerospace industry rocketry organization, I'll say, that I haven't had the chance to tour simply because I have friends in the industry. So absolutely, a lot of people have turned, it's been kind of the catalyst to, the science, technology, engineering, mathematics, the STEM programs. This has been a great gateway into fields in aeronautics, not just rocketry, definitely.
Yeah, I would think, and the skills, the math skills and everything else that you learn has got to make a difference in the classroom.
Yeah, definitely. It takes a special student, right? This is an extra effort above and beyond, right? So this is something, and not just learning from science and math perspective too, but I've mentored a few teams in the past, and to me it was always perhaps surprising at how unfamiliar they were with some basic tools. Cutting, sanding, gluing, yeah, things like that. So working with teams, some of those skills that I thought were more basic were really good skills to learn before they exited, I think, middle or high school. So it's been a good growth experience there too, even if they don't stick with anything that flies in the sky. Again, just that basic ability to use your hands to create, I thought that was a great thing as well.
Absolutely. And Eric, give us some websites. There's probably a couple which we can post up on my Larry Mueller show page. Where do people go?
Definitely. Okay. So you were mentioning the event this weekend. That's rocketsforschools.org. That's a great one too. If you're looking for just general information, I mentioned those two national organizations. There's National Association of Rocketry, which is NAR.org, just NAR.org, not NRA. That's a different one. And then Tripoli Rocketry Organization, which is just tripoli.org. So it's tripoli.org. Some local vendors, Lock Precision, they're out of Plymouth, Wisconsin. That's LOCPRECISION.com. And then Estes Rockets, again, a lot of people that have ever dabbled in rocketry, you know Estes. That's just EstesRockets.com.
Eric, it has been a real pleasure talking with you today. Thank you so much for being with us, and I know this event is going to be great fun over the weekend for you. Thanks, Eric. Eric Kamenberg, Eric is our rocket man here in Wisconsin, for sure. It was great fun talking with him. Tomorrow on the show, we'll take a look at running with a founder of the AF Run Club, and then we'll take a look at Wisconsin golf courses. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller.